Three men stood on the banks of the raging creek, now grown to a full-blown river after last night's rain. The rain had stopped hours ago, but it seemed there was no end to the runoff from the Sangre de Cristos.
They look so far away.
Not so far as they did yesterday.
Near, far, doesn't matter. We could be stuck here for days.
Days, Jason? That long? It's moving pretty fast. Seems to me it ought to empty out those mountains in no time.
Mayhap it's not that deep?
Oh, it's deep, all right. It's running fast. You're right about that, Saul. We'll make camp here, well back from the creek. I don't want anybody closer than 10 feet from the other side of that flood line. And have everybody set a rock behind their wheels.
The water, it was up here, wasn't it? But that's a good thing, no? See how far it has gone down?
Looks to me like it only had to go down 2 or 3 inches to back its way down here, Saul. This here's pretty flat land where we're standing.
What are you bunch of old hens doing? Let's get to fording that thing.
Can't be done.
Did you try? Did you even try to ride across?
It's very deep, Matthew. He should know, shouldn't he?
Yeah? Well, when was the last time you were through here, Fury? 8, 10 years ago?
6.
Well, a lot of things can change in 6 years. Now that's more than half a decade.
And with that, Matt goosed his horse into a quick trot, heading straight toward the edge of the water.
Hey, stop!
But Matt entered the water, which quickly rose from his horse's fetlocks to knees and hocks. Any time now, Jason thought. Then, quite suddenly, it was as if the world had dropped from beneath Matt's horse. They were both in the rapidly moving creek, with the horse struggling to keep his head above water while Matt tried to stay in the saddle.
Cripes. Get off! You're drowning him! Get behind him and grab his tail!
Matt acted as if he were deaf, continued to cling frantically to the horse's back.
Matt! Matthew McDonald! Jason, get him out of there!
Been trying. He won't listen.
Matt was in the current now, and he and his floundering horse were moving swiftly away.
Matt, boy, can you hear me? God damn it, Fury, do something!
Give me your horse, Hamish.
Hamish got down and handed over the reins without question. Jason swung up into the saddle and took off at a lope, parallel to the swollen creek bed, silently cursing all the while. He knew why he was the one everyone counted on to save this idiot. Wished he'd been at the other end of the forming camp. And then felt guilty for thinking it. When he came up even with Matt, he pulled Hamish's rope from the horn and shook out a loop. He'd try for the horse's head, but he'd be happy to just get a rope on Matt. The horse could make it out by himself without Matt impeding it. He quickly tied the end of it around the horn and then prayed that Hamish had paid somebody better than he or Matthew to train it.
Back! Back, old son!
Lo and behold, the rope grew taut. Matthew's progress was halted, and his horse began to turn in the water and then slowly began to swim diagonally against the current toward Jason.
Good boy. Back, back.
Hamish's horse kept doing his best to please. And then Matt's horse began to struggle. Jason knew he was having a hard time kneeing his way over the crest of the bank and carrying Matt's weight too. So he tried again.
Matt! Get off him and grab his tail! He'll pull you up right after him!
Matt shook his head vehemently. Mr. Big Man, Matt McDonald, was scared to death, and Jason knew it. And if he didn't get over it pretty damn quick, he was going to get both himself and his horse killed.
Can I help?
Yes!
Jason quickly slid down off the horse.
Don't let this horse move until I tell you, got it?
Hamish gave a quick nod, and Jason took off, running downstream toward Matt and his horse. Once he hit the water, he grabbed the rope to help him keep his balance. He knew that the water would be about waist high on him unless he went over the invisible bank that Matt's horse was struggling against. He didn't plan to get that far. Fighting the current, he waded out to about 10 feet from the horse's head and called to Matt again.
Get off the damn horse, you fool! He can't make the bank with you on him!
No response. He walked 5 feet closer, halving the distance between them.
Matt! Turn your head toward me and look!
Slowly, Matt's head came around. He appeared to see his father because Jason thought he saw a touch of relief on his face.
If you're afraid you're going to get kicked, dismount and work your way forward so you can get your hand on the rope, okay?
This time, Matt nodded. He let go of the reins, much to his horse's relief, and grabbed a handful of wet mane instead. Jason could tell that he'd freed his feet from the stirrups when his backside bobbed to the surface and he began to pull himself forward. He nearly drowned his horse in the process, but at last, he had the rope in his hands and hauled himself forward, hand over hand, to Jason.
You can stand up now!
Matt did, and seemed surprised when the water was that shallow.
Get back up to dry land. Tell your father not to let that horse of his move a muscle.
Matt threw Jason a sneer and worked his way around him. Jason waited until Matt was halfway back to his father before he moved forward toward the horse. He managed to grab one of the reins, snaking along the top of the water.
Oh, it's all right, old Jason. Listen, calm down. Easy, easy.
Slowly, the terrified animal relaxed a bit, although his hooves still churned the water.
All right, though. We won't let that dumbhead be the end of us, will we, boy?
He snagged the other rein.
All right. Now, when I jerk your reins, you just come along with me. It's like coming out of a stall that's dug down a mite from constant cleaning, right?
Jason closed his eyes for a second in silent prayer, then braced himself against the current and let go of the rope. He jerked the reins.
Hup, boy, hup!
And the pinto clambered over the crest of the bank just as easily as a cat running up a tree. With the horse's bulk to keep him from floating off downstream, Jason threw his arms around the beast's neck.
Good boy. Attaboy. We weren't going to let that idiot kill us, were we? Ah, oh, we're made of tougher stuff than that.
Attaboy, Jason! Good job!
Saul, Salmon, Dr. Morelli, Megan, Jenny, and a few others had gathered to watch the little drama in the creek. Jason flushed, grinned, tipped his hat, and began to lead Matt's horse out of the water after he removed the loop he tossed over its head. He noticed that the more shallow the water grew, the less the horse shivered, and the more he did. He shook his head. Jenny would have him smothered in quilts and drinking tea for the rest of the afternoon, for she was truly back to being the old Jenny. Piled with quilts and grudgingly sipping at the hot tea she'd forced on him, Jason sat silently in the back of the wagon while Jenny sat on the driver's bench, the closed copy of Moby Dick beside her. He was quite the hero, her brother, although he'd never see it that way, let alone admit to it. She was proud of him, truly proud. He had saved Matthew's life. Even Matthew admitted it, and he had more than his share of pride. This, she knew. But she couldn't help but admire him anyway. He had other qualities that more than made up for that tiny shortfall. Oh, but he looked commanding when he rode that big spotted gelding of his. And he was handsome, too. Handsome as the day was long, with those flashing blue eyes and those cleanly chiseled features and that devilish grin. He'd been so brave to try and ford the creek by himself. And he was going to be very rich someday. Not that a thing like money mattered to a girl like her, she reminded herself. But it never hurt, did it? She wondered. If she begged and pleaded with Jason long enough and hard enough, would he leave her behind once they reached their destination? True, she was only 15, but plenty of girls her age were already married and had children. Which was exactly, although she hardly dared admit it even to herself, what she was hoping would come about if she could just figure out how to get Matthew's attention in that way. She knew that Jason didn't much care for him, and that feeling was mutual. But then, they were of an age, weren't they? She supposed it was natural for jealousies to arise between them. Mrs. Matthew McDonald. Mrs. Matt McDonald. Jenny McDonald. Well, a girl could dream, couldn't she? Megan McDonald carried another pot of coffee to her wagon and her brother, the idiot. Honestly, how could anyone be so blind and stubborn? It amazed her that he had lived to see 12, let alone 20. Always doing exactly what he'd been told not to do, always disobeying orders since the time he knew what orders were. And he always suffered for it, which meant that she always had to take care of him in the aftermath. She half wished he'd break his leg or something, some injury that would keep him immobile and out of trouble, for a while at least. But he didn't, so she just kept patching him up and pouring him coffee and bandaging his blisters. He wanted to be in charge. He wanted to be the one everyone trusted. He wanted to be Jason. What he didn't understand was that trust like that wasn't given. It had to be earned. And Matt did his best to earn nothing except the occasional sneer. She loved him, but... After she dropped off the coffee, for which she received little more than a grunt from the still shivering and quilt-wrapped Matt, she went to check on his horse. Jason had stripped him of tack, or maybe it had been her father, but the gelding still needed a rubdown. Even in the sunshine, he was shivering. She went to work on him with a couple of old burr bags, and soon had him fairly dry and looking a good bit more comfortable. She looked around for Jason's Palomino mare and saw her tied to the Fury wagon, her nose bag on and moving rhythmically with the grinding of grain against molars. Leave it to Jason to think of his horse first. Leave it to Matt not to think of his horse at all. Her smile turned to a scowl. She was embarrassed enough by Matt's actions, but there stood her father, bragging to the Reverend Milcher on his boy's idiocy.
Rode right out there. Wouldn't take that upstart's word for nothing. It says he would have made it across, too, if Jason had warned him about the current instead of yelling at him to get off his horse. Trying to get my Matthew kicked to death. That's what Jason Fury was up to.
Now, even Megan knew that you should slip off a horse that was going down under you in the water. Slip off and grab his tail, out of reach of those pummeling hooves, and just float along after him. She'd done it herself once when she was younger and certainly more stupid. And she'd done it out of instinct. Apparently, Matt couldn't do the right thing even when he had specific instructions. But then she felt bad. She shouldn't think such things about her only brother, even if he acted like a lunatic half the time. Well, three quarters. She turned Matt's horse free and started back toward the wagon. But then she remembered that Matt was in there and went instead to the Fury wagon. She could use a visit with Jenny. It didn't hurt that Jason was inside either. Saul was leading his draft horses out to graze when he stopped to talk to Hamish.
I'd stop with the talking young Fury down, Mr. MacDonald. Matthew did a foolish thing, I know. Wasn't I there? And I think that most of the other people think so too. And that what Jason did, going out there after him, I mean, was truly brave.
Mind your own beeswax, Jew.
Saul said nothing, just gave his head a slow shake and proceeded with the horses. He'd given up on Hamish. Some had suggested to Saul that oxen would be better for pulling his merchandise wagon, but he liked the Shires. They were sure-footed, very strong, and gave him no trouble. Rachel could drive them all day without incident, and 10-year-old David had no difficulty controlling them either. Perhaps Saul would be sorry later on, but at the moment, he was glad he didn't have two teams of oxen to deal with, let alone one. He supposed it would be like having two teams of Hamish MacDonald to contend with each day. This he could do without. Two at a time, Saul led his big horses free. The ground practically shook as they trotted away.
Good for you, Saul. I overheard what you told MacDonald. He's sure a piece of work, ain't he?
And he reproduced in kind.
You can sure say that again. Matt's a skunk's behind if I ever met one.
Yeah, they're getting set up for dinner.
Saul watched his Rachel carry a bowl of something or other over to Olympia Morelli's cook tent.
I wonder what it will be this evening.
Sure as hell ain't gonna be nothing as exotic as pronghorn. At least I ain't been out hunting. Doubt anybody else has either.
Saul caught sight of Hamish, leading a party of four men and armed with a big knife, what he'd heard several of the other men refer to as an Arkansas toothpick.
It will be beef.
Saul's attention was diverted by the sight of a pretty young blonde woman with a six-year-old girl and a terrier pup tagging at her heels, walking down toward the shoreline. She carried a blanket and a long pole.
Isn't that Carrie English?
Beef? How do you know? And danged if it ain't. And she's got Chrissy and Rags with her, too.
They watched as she spread out her blanket, sat down on it, and baited her hook.
She gonna fish for her dinner?
I believe she is.
Rachel had told him that the petite midwife was running short on supplies already, and it was likely she was trying to keep up her end by supplying a major portion of at least one supper.
I'll go see, shall I?
And then, when he'd walked 10 feet, it suddenly occurred to him that Salmon had lost his wife, and just recently. It wouldn't hurt for Salmon to go help a pretty widow, would it?
Salmon! Hey, Salmon!
And as Salmon turned around and approached him, he thought, better her than the widow Jameson, at least. Eulalie Jameson and her daughter, Cynthia, just as plain, dark, and beetle-browed as her mother, were at that moment carrying a basket of canned goods to the cook tent. There were home canned tomatoes and peas and potatoes in this haul. Yesterday had been strawberry preserves, apricot jelly, and enough dried apples for 3 pies. Eulalie, Cynthia believed, was getting more than a little sick and tired of this community cooking business. The way Eulalie would see it, her preserves were hers, period. According to her mother, nobody could cook or can as well as she could anyway, so why should she be forced to share with a bunch of people who didn't know which end of the ham to keep for yourself and which one to send to the church poor drive?
Philistines.
Yes, Mama.
Long-suffering Cynthia didn't have much more charm than her mother, but she was at least relieved that somebody else was doing the cooking without demanding that she be pressed into service. Her sister, Deborah, had been in a state ever since the men brought her back from the Comanche camp, and their mother was doing nothing to make things any better. And their brother was no help either. A mama's boy to the end, Elmer was the one who planted the idea that Debbie has been a more than willing captive. Peckerwood. Sometimes she'd like to punch him. Except that wouldn't be very ladylike, would it? Cynthia was constantly concerned about being a lady. After all, she was practically an old maid, and she thought that perhaps she could find herself a man on the trip west. So far, she wasn't having much luck. Jason Fury and Matt McDonald were too young, although they were both highly attractive. Hamish McDonald was too old and too gruff and reminded her too much of her mother. Salmon Kendall and Randall Nordstrom had both lost their wives in the Comanche attack and were both of about the right age, but she didn't think it would be proper to single one of them out quite yet. She'd give it another week or two, although her mother had been nudging her toward Randall Nordstrom since the very day they shoveled the first grave dirt over his poor wife. And then there were the hired men. But somehow, Cynthia felt she was a little above Milt Billings and Ward Wanamaker and Gil Collins, even though she found herself fascinated by Gil. He had such nice blonde hair and such a clean, straight nose.
Cynthia! Honestly, girl, get your head out of the clouds.
They were at the cook tent already, and she helped her mother swing the basket of preserves up onto the table. Olympia Morelli, who was getting far too big to be decently out in public, Cynthia thought, took the jars from their basket, thanking them effusively for each one. That Jewish woman was there, too, and smiled at her. Cynthia looked away, embarrassed to be noticed. Her mother had refused to eat any supper the first couple of nights that Rachel Cohen helped with the cooking, but all those good smells finally got to her. She finally ate. But she still wouldn't admit it was any good, even though Cynthia had caught her scraping her plate more than once.
Oh, roast beef tonight, Mrs. Jameson. Mr. McDonald is slaughtering a steer. Your tomatoes, peas, and potatoes will make wonderful side dishes.
Huh.
Eulalie abruptly turned and walked back toward her wagon.
Thank you, I'm sure.
Cynthia then trotted to catch up with her mother. Eulalie glanced up the bank, then froze. Cynthia nearly ran into her.
Well, would you take a look at that?
Cynthia followed her mother's pointing finger to the figures on the creek's bank about 100 yards away.
Well, I believe that's Salmon Kendall with Carrie English. And his wife's not dead a fortnight. Why don't you have Salmon Kendall following you around?
I didn't think it was proper to...
Proper, my bustle. Well, it's probably too late now. You're going to stay an old maid all of your life, Cynthia Ann Jameson, unless you start baiting your line for Randall Nordstrom. He's probably a better catch anyway.
Yes, Mama.
It was 10 in the morning before Milton Ward rode back into camp with the news that although the water had significantly retreated, there wasn't a decent place for fording within miles. Ward's horse was covered with drying mud up to his belly, and Milt reported that the meadowland on either side of the creek was all in the same condition, waterlogged. For the first time, Jason was at a loss. The main part of the creek bed itself was probably 8 to 10 feet deep, with a sharp drop-off on either side, worn that way by all the rainstorms since he'd been last through with his father. There was barely a trickle of water going through it today, although a few muddy sinkholes existed where large carp, washed down from somewhere upstream, gasped their last.
What you thinking, Jason? Build a bridge?
Out of what?
Ward looked around at the featureless landscape and gave a sheepish grin.
Oh, yeah.
But then Jason recalled a story his father had told him about taking a train of settlers out to Oregon, in which he was faced with a similar problem.
On the other hand, Ward, you may not be far from wrong.
Huh?
You feel like digging?
I must be feeble, Jason, because I don't know what in tarnation you're talking about.
You will, Ward. You will.
By 2 in the afternoon, Jason had put together 2 gangs of men for the work. Hamish McDonald wasn't happy.
If I wanted to wreck my pants and boots, I could have just stayed home and dangled them in the creek.
That blasted Jason Fury. The whole thing is his fault. You know, I saw a map. We could have swung farther south and crossed the Canadian River all at once. But nay. We have to ford every bloody branch of it. What kind of fool called a river the Canadian this bloody far from Canada anyway? We're practically in Mexico.
I'm damned if I know.
And now that little brat of a lad has us digging our way out. Might as well try digging to China, I say.
Hamish grabbed a shovel and tossed it to Matt, then grabbed the other one for himself.
Tell him then, Pa. Tell your friend Milcher. I already know how you feel about it. Pa?
What?
This time, aren't you the one putting on a little too much of the English?
Ah! Oh, sass! You're as bad as Jason Fury. Sass and your betters. I don't know what this world is coming to.
By 3 in the afternoon, the 2 teams of men had dug down the near slope of the bank. Jason had them start well back at a narrow angle, digging their shovels into the sodden earth and emptying them down into the creek itself. By the time they pitched the last shovelfuls down into the creek, the earth they'd uncovered was dry and the creek bed was a quarter filled with earth. Then they started on the walls of the opposite bank, digging down the muddy waterway and casting the refuse at their feet. Jason planned for them to dig the path 2 wagons wide and on a shallow slope both down and up, filling the creek itself halfway to the top of its original bank. Things were going along quite handily, too, when he heard sounds approaching from the way they had come.
Everybody, get your guns. Get back to your wagons and your families.
It didn't sound like marauding Indians, but it could very easily be brigands and thieves. They were driving wagons, at least sounded like they were. He had only reached his own wagon when they came into sight, a wagon train, just like theirs. It was somewhat smaller and battered. Some of the wagon canvases showed signs of burning as they had no herd or remuda. Jason, his rifle over his shoulder, jumped down from his wagon and walked forward, holding up a hand. The incoming wagon stopped, and a middle-aged fellow, his graying head bandaged, and 1 arm in a sling, rode out to meet him.
Had some trouble?
Comanche! They nigh on killed half of us. Men, women, kids, didn't matter, before they ran off our herd. We have starved, mister. Best we done since the attack was a deer 3 days back.
Well, settle your wagons here, friend. We'll feed you. And we've got a doctor, too.
Now bless you, son. May God bless you all. What you called, son?
I'm sorry. I'm Jason Fury, sir.
Well, by God, you any relation to my good friend Jedediah Fury?
His son, sir.
Hoo-hoo! He here? Or are you leading this whole shebang by your lonesome? I'm Colorado Gooden, leading what's left of this tattered recruit of Santa Fe.
I've heard my father speak of you, Mr. Gooden. But I have bad news. My father was killed on the trail a few weeks back. Comanche. Possibly the same band that attacked you.
Oh, Lordy. Ain't nothing good in the world anymore. The great Jedediah Fury, dead and gone.
Jason suddenly realized that he felt much the same. There had been so much to take care of, so many people to handle and manage, that he hadn't had time to mourn. He hadn't thought he needed to. But right now, in the presence of this stranger, he found himself crying just like a kid. He wiped his eyes with his shirt sleeve, but that didn't stop the tears from falling. Before he realized what was happening, Colorado Gooding had dismounted.
We all gonna miss him terrible, son. Something terrible.
Jason didn't know how long they stood there, in the middle of that meadow, weeping. All he knew was that when it was done, he felt better. And he was pretty damn glad that Hamish and Matt McDonald hadn't been there to see him.
Sorry. Didn't mean to go all blubbery on you, Mr. Gooden. My pa always taught me that men don't cry.
Yeah. Well, Jason, even your pa couldn't be right about everything. Call me Colorado. Now, tell me, what are you folks doing stopped out here on a nice day like this?
They moved Gooding's wagons around half of Jason's in a semicircle, and then Jason showed Gooding the dig. Gooding immediately added what few able-bodied men he had left to the project, and then sent the others to Dr. Morelli, who was obviously thrilled to be able to put down his shovel and pick up instruments more suitable to his profession. The digging was finished by nightfall, and once again the men butchered a steer and the women folk put together a meal. Gooding's people ate ravenously. Jason, Saul, Morelli, Salmon, Hamish, Colorado Gooding, and a few of Colorado's men all sat near the main campfire, eating good barbecued beef, hot cornbread with butter and jelly, and a variety of canned vegetables from practically every wagon in Jason's train.
You sure it was a Comanche?
Sure as the day I was born, filthy bastards.
I wonder why they let us off so easy.
I'd hardly call it easy. And we had quite a few more men with guns.
Well, that knew how to use them anyway. We was damn lucky to keep our scalps.
One of his men, a big Swede called Thorson, nodded in agreement.
We're lucky to be eating this good meal with you, to have lived this long. I lost my brother and his wife, and even I took a spear in my leg.
Lucky I caught it when I did, Thorson. You were pretty close to gangrene.
Didn't your people have a doctor in their number? Or sugar cubes?
Closest thing we had to a doc was a midwife, but she got killed right off. What's sugar cubes got to do with anything?
Long story, Colorado.
You say you knew Jason's papa?
Oh, me and old Jedediah Fury go way back to 49. You know, when everybody and his brother went gold crazy. Why, practically every other fella in the country was off to see the elephant. It was folks like me and Jedediah who took them there.
Elephants? There are elephants where we're going?
Not really. I'll tell you later.
Oh, more than once, me and Jedediah met up somewhere and hooked our caravans together. Strength in numbers and all that. Whoa, by God, this is fine beef, Jason. My regards to the cook.
Cooks?
Quite, in fact, I was thinking, if Jason ain't got no objections, that mayhap we could tag along with you as far as Santa Fe.
Ah, that's where you're headed then, is it?
Yep. That's all right with you, Jason?
Fine by me.
The two trains, now one, crossed the creek the next morning, saving the widow Griggs, whose late husband Milton had installed a cast-iron bottom in his wagon and had carried an anvil in it, for last, right before the livestock were run across. By the time the last goat bleated its way across, water was already beginning to seep across the lowest part of the built-up artificial path they'd made to bridge the creek. Jason knew, because he'd stayed behind, watching to make certain that every single wagon, ox, horse, cow, pig, goat, and dog made it across without problem. Colorado Gooding was somewhere up front, he supposed, taking much pleasure in heading up such a large train of wagons. And Hamish MacDonald was probably right beside him, talking up the beauties of the lands beyond Santa Fe, at least what he'd heard or read about them. Jason reined Cleo around and loped her up past the herd to catch up with the wagons. People actually looked happy this morning, where they had appeared sharp or cross or simply dejected before. Maybe it was because they were finally moving again. Maybe it was just because the rain was over and the sky was clear. Whatever the reason, he was just thankful. Even Eulalie Jameson, her cat Boots dozing in her lap, waved and smiled when he passed her rig. He was so surprised, in fact, that it took him a second to return the gesture.
Fine morning, isn't it, Mrs. Jameson?
Why, lovely, Mr. Fury. Just lovely.
Jason dug his heels into his mare before Eulalie had a chance to think of any other questions, but slowed down when he reached the Cohen's rigs. Saul was driving the one behind, the rig that carried the merchandise for his hardware store.
Morning.
Nice day, isn't it?
That why everybody's in such a good mood?
I believe so. This troubles you?
Only insofar as Eulalie Jameson smiled at me, Saul.
I suppose that might trouble me as well. But then, I have the safety of my Rachel's skirts to hide behind, don't I? And I am not such a fine figure of a man as you, Jason. Rachel says you make all the girls' hearts beat a little faster.
These women don't have enough to do that they've got to gossip all day.
We men brag about the animals we hunt or the men we best. Maybe it gives them something to do while they cook, while they do things that women do. Jason, you watch out for that Alabama man.
Who?
Montana, Utah, whatever his name is.
Colorado?
Uh-huh.
Why? He's a friend of my pa's, Saul.
Something bothers me. Perhaps it is just that he is too friendly with Hamish and the Reverend. Perhaps it is only that I do not believe he has bathed in too long a time. I don't know. Don't listen to me.
No, Saul, no. I've been concerned about Colorado myself.
He didn't say how much. All he knew was that he wasn't going to go suspecting the man he blubbered all over last night of... what? Commandeering his wagon train? That was just crazy. Still, he waved Saul goodbye and goosed his mare ahead toward the front of the train. It was getting on toward afternoon, and he'd best be up front when Hamish found out there was another branch of the creek to ford. It looked to him like Colorado Gooding had added 9 wagons to their force. Most were driven by women, but he saw a few strange men on horseback. To these, he rode up and introduced himself. He met Paul Hartung, Garth Witherspoon, Mel Sanderson, farmers and ranchers all, and Raul Chavez, a native of Santa Fe, who had ridden all the way to Kansas City to pick out new pigments for his stained glass business, and was now hauling them back with Gooding's caravan.
The other hombres, they were killed by Comanche. My own brother, Luis, was among the dead.
I guess we've all lost somebody.
Mr. Gooding, he tells us of your father. I am sorry, amigo.
Thanks. Sorry for your brother, too. Were you two in the glass business together?
See, he was learning the trade. Dios mio, is this yet another creek to be forded?
Jason tipped his hat and loped on ahead, leaving Chavez behind.
Ah, damn! Damn it! I knew it!
Hamish was off his horse. Jason figured there had been quite a lot of swearing that came before, and was glad that he had only just ridden up. He, too, dismounted.
Well, looks like we got another hole to start filling, Hamish.
Oh, God damn it! talk to hell!
The Reverend Milcher, who had ridden a few feet off to the side, probably so as not to sully his ears with Hamish's profanity, rode closer and stopped.
Dear Lord!
There you be right on the money, Reverend.
If you'd done the sensible thing and taken us farther south, we would have only had to ford this bloody thing one blasted time.
Hamish, if you don't want to dig, then why don't you take a couple of men and go shoot us a couple of deer or antelope for supper?
Hamish gritted his teeth and swung back up on his horse, and without a word, rode back along the line of wagons toward the Ramuda. Jason noticed that he pulled his boy out of line to follow him. Good riddance, Jason thought, and turned his attention back to the gaping hole that ran the length of the creek bed. This branch carried quite a bit more water than the previous passage, and was wider and deeper. The banks were only 6 or 7 feet above the water, although there was no telling how deep that water was. Not without going in. Jason tossed his reins to Colorado.
Nope, you can swim, boy.
You want to volunteer?
Oh, wouldn't dream of robbing you with a pleasure.
I didn't think so.
Jason walked to the edge of the bank and slid straight down it on his butt. Upon landing, he found himself knee-deep in water.
You'd best toss me down a loop, Colorado, or I'll never get back up.
In a matter of seconds, a rope sailed down and landed in front of him in the brown murk. Jason picked it up and waded out to the middle, then the opposite bank, then 10 feet upstream and back across. The water at its deepest was only waist high on him, a depth that, under normal circumstances, could be easily forded by both livestock and wagons. The bed was gravel and seemed solid enough. The problem would be getting the wagons and livestock down to it. Well, wasn't like he was new to digging. He snugged the rope around his middle, sloshed back down to where the horses were waiting above, and took a steady grip on the rope.
Start hauling, Colorado!
The second dig wasn't as bad as the first. For one thing, they had a few more men on the crew right from the start. For another, all the dirt could be thrown to the side instead of carried to or thrown into the creek itself. Still, it took them until well after dark. They were not finished even then. Jason called a halt for the day, and they all trooped back to the now circled wagons and the cook fire. Dinner was a little sparse, Jenny thought. Hamish, Matt, and their men hadn't been able to scare up more than one thin buck for their dinner, but the women had stretched it by making venison stew with plenty of home-canned okra, peas, potatoes, onions, and tomatoes, and one of the Cohens' goats. The goat's name was Nellie, and Jenny was sorry to see her butchered. Saul sat next to Jason and Jenny while they ate, his wife having taken charge of the children, and every once in a while, tired though he was, he said,
"Well, now, I believe that was a piece of my Nelly. Not so gamey, you know?"
And Jason would laugh through his fatigue, Jenny would smile, and Saul would shrug his shoulders. And they all would think very unkind thoughts about Hamish and Matt MacDonald, except for Jenny. She was still thinking kind thoughts about Matt. More than kind, as a matter of fact. Just that morning, he had kissed her behind the shelter of his father's wagon. There was no particular reason for it, which made it all the more exciting for Jenny. He had simply led his horse up to her after Megan, to whom she'd been talking, went up front. He grabbed a pair of gloves out of the back of the wagon, smiled, leaned over, kissed her square on the mouth, mounted up, and rode off. All without a word. She'd been thinking about it all day long. And she hadn't told anyone, not even Megan, not even her diary, and especially not Jason. Jason would throw a fit, wouldn't he? Especially now, as exhausted as he was. He was practically falling asleep while he ate, although she had been able to coax him into changing out of those muddy clothes. That was something, anyway. Usually she couldn't get him to do anything that was even halfway good for him. But even now, tired and dirty, he was still remarkably handsome, she thought. If she'd been an artist or a sculptor, she couldn't think of any other subject she'd rather paint or model than her brother, or Matthew MacDonald. Either one would do quite beautifully. She realized that the little group had gone silent and looked over at Jason and Saul. Saul had fallen back against the wagon's wheel and was asleep with his mouth open. Jason dozed with his chin on his chest.
Some wagon master.
Jenny stood up to step over her brother. She put her hand gently on Saul's shoulder, and he opened an eye.
It's time to go to your wagon, Mr. Cohen. Wonderful. Just what we need.
When Saul had sleepily stumbled off a good 20 feet and his wife came out to make sure he got all the way home, Jenny bent to Jason. She had him, in fact, clear up into the wagon and had his boots pried off before the skies opened. Jenny didn't know how she'd fallen asleep, but she must have. For the next thing she knew, Jason was gone, and there was a lot of yelling outside, mixed in with the battering of rain on the lightning-brightened canvas roof. Quickly, she poked her head outside. She might as well have poured a bucket of water over her head. The rain was that fast and thick. But through it, she was able to see men rushing from their wagons and toward the creek.
Wake up, everybody! Wake up! Emergency! Emergency!
Mr. Kendall was going from wagon to wagon right around the circle, waking them up. And it wasn't long before he came to hers. He was trotting through the mud, going to go right on past, but she flagged him down.
Mr. Kendall! What is it? What's wrong?
It's Carrie English! Her wagon's going in the creek!
After glancing back to make certain that Jason had heard too, Jenny jumped down from the wagon without thinking about a coat or hat, even in the cold rain, and began slogging her way toward the creek. She couldn't imagine why the Widow English had moved her wagon so near the stream that it could slide in. It had been a good 30 feet from the bank this afternoon while the men were digging. Jenny picked up her pace. There was little Chrissy to think of, and Rags.
Oh, Chrissy! My little Chrissy!
Carrie English, soaked and sobbing, was now sheltered in Hamish McDonald's comforting grip.
Don't you worry, lass. Jason will get her.
Jason prayed that Hamish was, for once, right. He leapt into Cleo's saddle, which had been put in place by Ward, and loped along the water's edge, signaling Ward and Saul and Morelli to get a move on, too. It was black as pitch, save for the lightning that flashed all too near, and he felt as though he were standing in a shower bath. A cold one. But as he neared the wagon, floating downstream in the current, he pulled his rope off the horn, tethered one end of it there, and leapt down off Cleo's back, carrying the rest of the coil.
You know what to do!
He called to Ward before he waded out into the current, letting out rope as he moved closer to the wagon. Ward nodded at him, and that was the last time he looked back. The wagon was still floating, but he didn't know how much longer that piece of luck would hold out. And he mentally kicked himself for the 1,000th time. He should have reminded Carrie to block the wheels of her wagon. Hell, he should have blocked them himself. Her wagon had been well up from the water's edge, but on a slight incline. But who could have known it would rain so blasted much and so hard? Who could have known the water would rise so fast and that the ground beneath the wagons would turn to slick, slippery mud? He should have. That was who.
Halt!
The water, having gone from ankle to thigh high, was suddenly over his head. He fought to pull himself to the surface. Just as he thought his lungs would burst, his head cleared the water. He began to swim for the wagon, aided by the current, and finally grabbed the driver's bench with one hand. Jason quickly looped the rest of the rope around the bench, tying it off hard.
Chrissy! Chrissy, you in there?
Yes, sir?
You just hold still, baby. Ward, toss me another!
Ward's loop sailed out and just about settled over Jason's head. It would have, too, if he hadn't shot a hand out to catch it.
Halt!
He dove under the water and tied the second rope to the wiffle bar. When he came up, Jason was ready for it. Just like that, another loop rocketed out from the bank. It landed on top of the driver's bench, which he tied it round. He signaled the men, and one by one, the ropes were taut and the wagon stopped moving. Thank God. A glance over his shoulder showed him that Morelli had switched horses and was sitting on Cleo now, holding her steady.
Chrissy, honey! Come here! We're gonna take a little swim.
Is that you, Mr. Fury?
Come on, baby.
Where's Red?
He went on ahead of us, Chrissy. He's all right.
At last, he felt the little girl put her tiny hand in his. Rags had indeed jumped from the wagon, but swung the wrong way. Now he was 100 feet downstream from the wagon, swimming desperately for the bank. Jenny kept pace with him, encouraging him. She had run past Jason, who had already been tying the first rope on the wagon seat. There was nothing she could do there. But she'd heard a faint, terrified yip from downstream and had followed the sound.
Good boy, Rags! You can do it!
Her skirts felt like lead, weighing her down, holding her back, and she stopped to strip out of them. Nobody would see her clear down here. Rushing ahead in nothing but her chemise and pantaloons, she splashed into the muddy water. Rags was tiring, she could see it. He'd stopped barking and was now stroking only intermittently.
Rags! Don't you dare die! What will Chrissy do without you?
The water was up to her waist, but she kept moving forward. A few more steps and she reached the drop-off. She bobbed right up to the surface, blinked muddy water from her eyes, and began to swim for the now limp puppy. Jason made his way slowly up one of the ropes, with Chrissy clinging to his neck. As he pulled his way toward the bank, which seemed a lot farther off when he was trying to get to it than when he'd swum out to the wagon, the men on the ropes slowly backed their horses, helping him a little.
Mr. Fury, I don't see Rags. Where is he?
Let's worry about Rags later, all right, sugar?
Jason felt his boot touch the bank. He stepped up on its spongy surface and was suddenly in water that was only hip deep.
Gotcha!
At last, Jenny reached the pup and latched onto him, pulling him toward her. His curly coat, usually black, tan, and white, was now a sodden, solid, dirty brown from the water. His usually hard, muscled body felt like a dish rag. Still, she clasped him to her and began to stroke, one arm, for the bank. Progress was slow, and she feared she was far from the wagons by this time. She was tiring, too, and each pull toward the creek's edge took more and more out of her. She began to wonder if she'd ever set her feet on the earth again. One stroke, another, the bank seemed just as far away. And then she felt something wet but warm. Rags licking her cheek.
We'll make it, boy.
Put it around you, Jenny.
Suddenly, Jenny realized what Matt was talking about. His rope floated only a few feet from her. She stroked again and managed to get her hand on it. Then her wrist through the loop. She hung on for all she was worth.
Got it!
The rope began to pull her toward shore with what seemed like magic with swiftness.
Let go of the damn dog and grab it with both hands! I'm gonna pull your arm off!
Just keep going!
Matt kept pulling, and he was right. By the time she made the bank and was able to stand up, her arm felt like it had been wrenched from its socket.
You all right? You're naked.
I'm fine, thank you. And I'm not naked. I have my underwear on.
Could have fooled me.
Jenny looked down at herself just as the lightning flashed overhead. The water had made the cotton of her underthings clingy and nearly transparent. In shock and shame, she figured that at least he couldn't look at her if she was behind him. She shifted the puppy to her bad arm and held the other up to Matt.
Give me a ride back to my clothes, please.
Real shame, if you ask me.
And despite herself, Jenny felt a strange and not unwelcome tingle zipper its way up her spine. Chrissy having been delivered into the hands of Dr. Morelli, Jason took the last rope and prepared himself to go back into the water.
What are you doing? Gonna dive down and hook up the tongue.
The wagon's tongue was the pole that came off the wiffle bar and extended up between the two pairs of horses that pulled the wagon. It was stuck in the creek's bed already. They had made no further progress on getting the wagon out. Ward hopped off his horse.
Let me go this time, Jason.
I need you out here, Ward, holding pressure on the wagon.
But...
Doc, give me your rope and snug up the other end around your saddle horn.
Morelli hesitated a moment, but then did as he was told. Jason tossed him one end of the rope, uncoiled several loops to give him sufficient slack, and then waded in. He made his way to the wagon's bench, then dove. He knew he wouldn't be able to see anything, so he felt his way down to the wiffle, then along the tongue, until he found the closest ring to the end. Quickly, he threaded the rope through it, but ran out of air before he could tie it off. Jason broke the surface, but before he could dive down again, he heard Saul call out.
Tie it down, Jason! Tie it to the surface!
At first, he thought Saul was crazy, but then he realized that the end going to the saddle horn was taut.
Right!
Jason pulled on the other end of the rope until it, too, was taut. He pulled so hard, in fact, that he felt the wagon's tongue come free from the creek's bed.
Hold that horse still!
He kept on pulling until the end of the tongue broke the water's surface. Then and only then did he tie it off at the ring, then turn for shore. Jason made it out of the water just as that terrier pup of Chris's came galloping up the side of the creek, carrying on happily.
Rex! Rex! Mr. Fury, you were right!
Morelli let her slide to the ground, and the pup flew into her arms.
I'll be dang!
Miracles happen all around us.
All right, everybody. We don't have this rig out of soup yet.
Jason swung up on Dr. Morelli's horse. The battering rain was punishing them all. The next morning found the men digging again, or at least as much as they could, the water still being high. Most of the women washing out muddy clothes and Carrie English's belongings all sitting out in the sun to dry. As for Carrie, she was grateful. Grateful her child had been saved, which she was told was due to Jason Fury in its entirety. Grateful her possessions were only damp, not lost forever. And grateful that her daughter's only companion, a little terrier mix, had survived. Matt McDonald had told her she had Jenny Fury to thank for that. He'd said she'd swum right out, brave as you please, caught the floundering dog, and brought it safely to shore. She wondered if he was sweet on Jenny. Of course, he was the only man outside of her brother who was of a suitable age for Jenny. What was she, 15, 16? She certainly was pretty. She had her brother's wheat blonde hair and good looks and elegant carriage. And his good heart, it seemed. Carrie hoped the creek wouldn't go down too fast. After all, some of her things were still dripping. Her mother's brake front was going to be all right, too. It had been her grandmother's before that, and had made the trip by sailing ship all the way across the ocean from Ireland. A great many hopes and dreams were tied up in that old piece of furniture. Rags ran past her, followed by Chrissy.
Mr. Kendall's coming, Mama!
Instinctively, Carrie went to her hair to straighten it.
All right, baby. Go play.
Jenny snuggled down farther into her quilts. After all, hadn't Dr. Morelli told her to stay in bed today? He hadn't said she couldn't read, though, and Moby Dick was under her pillow. But somehow, she found she couldn't concentrate on Captain Ahab and Starbuck or the Great White Whale this morning. All she could think about was Matthew McDonald. She loved him, and she couldn't tell a soul, although she was bursting to. There was a knock on the wagon's tailgate, and then Megan's head appeared above it.
Morning. You best keep your distance. Dr. Morelli thinks I'm getting a cold, you know, from last night.
We all ought to have one, then. I've never been so cold and wet in all my born days.
Megan, I have something to tell you. But you've got to promise that you won't tell a living soul, that you'll take it to your grave.
Well, that sounds important.
It's the most important thing I've ever had to say in my whole livelong life.
Well, I promise then. Cross my heart and hope to die.
Megan, I'm in love with your brother.
Oh.
What?
Jenny, you're my very best friend, and I love my brother, but...
But?
But I don't think he's the kind you ought to fall in love with, that's all.
And just what kind is that?
Salomon Kendall tipped his hat.
Morning, ma'am.
Carrie pointed to a barrel set out to dry.
Won't you sit down, Salomon?
Salomon sat, looking generally nervous, and took off his hat. He passed its brim over and over again through his long fingers.
And what can I do for you this morning, Salomon?
Oh, nothing. Well, quite a bit.
Yes?
Well, it's just that last night when I got to thinking about... I gotta go.
Carrie watched after him as he walked away quickly. If he wasn't a man with marriage on his mind, she'd eat her hat. Maybe his, too. But she wondered if it was her he really wanted, or just another woman to take his wife's place. It was very soon, she realized, perhaps too soon. She would wait and see. Megan hopped down from the Fury wagon, feeling terrible. She was a traitor to her brother and a traitor to her best friend all at once. To her brother because she should have stood up for him instead of talking him down, even though he deserved it. And to Jenny because her feelings were real and true, and Megan had dashed her tender hopes. Or at least she thought she had. Hope she had. And hope she hadn't. She walked back to her own wagon, then changed her mind before she reached it, altering her path to take her down by the creek. Jason would be there. It did her good just to look at him. Maybe, if she stared at him long enough, she could think what to do. When she reached the creek, Abigail Crimp had a blanket all laid out.
Would you like to join me, Megan?
Thank you.
Oh, isn't he just the most handsomest thing?
Who?
Who? Why, Mr. Fury, of course.
Megan, disgusted, started to stand up and leave. If anybody had a right to gush over Jason, it was her. Not some Johnny-come-lately floozy, which was what her father called Abigail. But Abigail grabbed her sleeve and pulled her back down.
Oh, you don't have to go so soon, do you? I think he's just about to take off his shirt.